Man. It's, you know, interesting how, as we were talking about the things, you know, that we're dealing with, and these people in our families are dealing with, you know, that's, you know, real life stuff is what life's like a lot, right? You know, that's real. And then you come here, or a place like here, and we talk about, come on in, Doc.
Hey, what's going on? So much for being invisible.
Yeah. I had to call you out. So we're talking, you know, the things that are obviously, you know, weighing on us that we were all talking together about. That's real life and what life is like, you know, a lot. It's always at least that undercurrent of that type of thing running, right? And you come here and or a place like here, and you listen to me or someone like me, and we read from the Bible, and sometimes there's sort of a disconnect, that, right? And I, you know, I've spent a lot of time, you know, over the last few years especially, but, you know, a lot of time in general, think about what exactly the Bible is, or what our scriptures are, and what are we to do with them? You know, what is that? Where does that fit into this real life that we have? And you see things like these, like this. Just an example. You know, we kind of you know, led up to this in our, you know, resurrection stories a couple weeks ago. And it's very familiar. So when they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," he said. "You know that I love you." You know, obviously, we've all heard this a thousand times, right? We know the context for this and the setting for this and kind of the subtext, right? This where Peter had denied Jesus and didn't even knew him, you know, when he was under trial. Here in this post-resurrection appearance of Jesus, he sat down with Peter to kind of address the elephant in the room, right? "Yes, Lord," he said, "you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." And again, Jesus said, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And he answered, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And Jesus said, "Then take care of my sheep." Let's keep reading it. The third time he said to them, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, "Do you love me?" He said, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my sheep. Very truly I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go." Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. And then he said to him, "Follow me." So, you know, things like this, just this, almost just chosen at random. You know, what do we do with this? What do these things, and you can pick out whichever random, you know, you can open your Bible and whatever page and put your finger on, and that random thing you come to, what does that, where does that fit with this real life, like we've been, you know, praying about, talking about, the good or the bad or the ugly, what do we do with this, right? And we can take a number of approaches, but it's very tempting. Look at this next picture. Well, forget that for now. I'm glad you can't read all that, right?
Did you make this one?
Yeah. Well, you know, I could have in some ways, you know, and it's tempting to take the Bible that we have, this collection of whatever the Bible is, right? And look at each one of these. We could take that, what I just read, as a data point, right? And we can parse that out and see what kind of data we can come up with about God, right? And if we can string together enough of these data points, enough of this information about God, then if we can get all that in line, if we can get that system worked out, then hopefully we can get to the point that we're supposed to be wherever we're supposed to be, right? Maybe we can know more about God, or whatever the goal is. It's very tempting as modern and postmodern people in a very scientific age to try to do that, right? We do that with lots of things. So we can take all these stories from these different sources that we have, in which, you know, they're kind of wild stories, and they're kind of all over the place, you know, they're told from different perspectives. We can map them out, right? We can see where the data falls. We can make this chart. We can make a system. And you can do that with all of the scriptures. You can attempt to make a system out of it, right? To string together all the data and to come up with a picture of God and a picture of what we're supposed to do as God's people. And then we can argue about our system versus somebody else's system, right? And study, right? I guess the word that we use a lot, we can study the Bible. There's nothing wrong with studying the Bible, right? But we're still left with something that looks something like this, and we have a system, and we do our studies, right? And you know, like Kim was saying before, we have these other sources that we bring up. Well, what about this source or that source? You know, what do we do with that? How do we study that? Where does that fit in? Is this a data point that's true, or where does this data point fit in? Right? Now we can read that sentence. At the end of John's book, right after that little story we just read, almost chosen at random, he says, Jesus did many other things as well. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that even the whole world would not have room for the books that would be written. John's saying that, so this is not all. Right? It's kind of giving us a hint here. Because really, the Bible that we have, that God gave us, at the end of the day, the vast, overwhelming majority of it, it's stories, right? They're stories. And calling something a story doesn't mean it's true. This means it's a narrative. It's a story. So how do we take a story and try to turn that into data? Okay. Now, let's go to the blank page. I'll tell a story about this. Okay, this is a leather-bound Thompson Chain Reference Bible in the good old approved King James Version. And the very first page says, awarded to Jonathan E. Stamper on 12/22/1991. So I was 12 then. Congratulations on behalf of the junior class at Parker's Chapel for outstanding class participation. Reverend Joe Powers. All right. So, as a 12-year-old, you know, I knew all of the trivia, right? You know. Yeah, that's great.
I got to remember that one.
Yeah. And so they gave me this, and man, I was just ecstatic. Yeah. I mean, this was real leather Bible, just like my dad carried, right? And the Thompson Chain Reference Bible. I don't know, y'all probably had one of these or something like one of these, right? It's about half text. It's in these columns, and each verse, each sentence has a number, right? And it's about half text, and about two-thirds text, and about a third are these little references, right? So as you read down, you can see. As you read, well, like for instance, what we just read. Verily, verily, I say unto you. All right. Then you can stop right there and you can look at reference 37:51 for verily, verily. You can turn back here in the back and, well, there's a concordance with all the words, right? So you can look up each word. But if you go to 37:51 in the chain reference section, you can look up the verily, verilies of Jesus. Ooh. All right, and there were, looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 18, 19, 20, About 27 verily, verilys of Jesus. And so there's the verse references. So now you can go back to each time Jesus said verily, verily, you can see what he very, verily said. Right? Oh, you can really dig into that. Right? I mean, you can probably, I could probably make a whole sermon on the verily, verilys of Jesus. Like, really? I'm sure it's pretty interesting, right? I you know, these, you know, if I couldn't do it, Mike Owens could make it interesting. You know, he could do that. He could dig into that, right? He could study that. And that's how we, people like me, you know, preachers, that's how we do it a lot, right? We study, we dig in, we parse it out. And so I knew all the trivia, you know, I had outstanding class participation. That's how I got this thing to start with. You know, so as a teenager, off and on as a teenager anyway, I would get into that, and I'd read it, and I'd go to the chain room, look it up, and all this stuff. But, you know, I was a grown man. I was married. I can remember. I could probably come up with a date, with very nearly the date, because I remember about the time of year. And I was married, and it was when Mike was a pastor at Baptist Union. But it was that long. I mean, I was, 23 before I ever, like, sat down and read the book of John all the way through. At once, you know, and part of that was, I'm sure, to me, and part of it was this system of how we do it, and part of it was trying to read it in with this, not, you know, in a language, you know, it probably took that long to have the skill to read this language really and understand what was being said. Part of it, and part of it was because, I mean, look, how are you supposed to read that like a story? You know, I mean, it's every sentence has a number. You know, when you read a story that the sentences don't have numbers. But I was that old. It's pretty young now, but it was that long before I read John all the way through enough to understand it and get what was, you know, the narrative. And I could remember that happened very clearly. I can remember, and I've told this story here before, that when I, as those weeks after doing that, and I go to church and Mike was preaching, he would say the name Jesus, I would just get like excited. I was like, I just like the scene in Elf. I know him. But really, just being, you know, enthralled with just, because I felt like I knew who, not what, but I knew who he was talking about. This man named Jesus. Right? And so, all those years leading up to before my excellent class participation, you know, I was in the junior class. I was, you know, 12 years old. I was, you know, above the little kid stuff. But I knew all of those stories from the flannel graph times. Who had flannel graphs when you were kids in Sunday school, right? I wish we still had some flannel graphs. Well, what flannel graph story is this? Okay, Joey, don't know what a flannel graph is. A flannel graph is this background, so it's just the background scene, right? And all those people, and like the birds in the sun, are these little pieces of flannel that would stick to it. So the teacher would go through telling the story, and she would have this outline. She'd be able to act out the story by placing these things up there as she goes. And they would move. You would move and take away and add others, right? So you guys know what I'm talking about, flannel graph. What is this story? Who said Zacchaeus? He was a wee little man, and a wee little man was he, and he climbed up in this sycamore tree for the Lord he wanted to see, right? Isn't that awesome? Look how wee little he is. Isn't that great?
Sitting on the leaves. Yeah. You can see vertically
challenged. Yeah. But look at him. Look at him. He is tiny. He's like Jesus' torso. That's awesome, right?
Looks like he's somewhere in Virginia too.
Right, does. Yeah. Yep. So that's a good old American plane tree, the American sycamore occidental, the Platanus occidentalis, I'm sure, right? Okay. So I knew all those through my excellent class participation, how I got this Bible, right? And then, you know, you outgrow the flannel graph, right? And we start to study it and break it down and get the data points, right? Let's go to the next picture. Now, I love the Bible Project. That's awesome that you guys mentioned that, right? I love those guys. There's this website. They have like a YouTube channel, and they will kind of go through whatever you want to look at. They have all kinds of stuff. It's called the Bible Project, and they're awesome. But they... I listened to them on a podcast one day. And two guys that do it, and they know more about the Bible than I ever will, right? And again, utmost respect. I was really disappointed in them one day, and I think I've said this year before, because they were talking on the podcast about what the Bible is actually like. And they were saying a lot of what I'm saying, that it's mostly stories, right? And they were just... And they came out and said it. They were just like, I really wish it would that Bible had answers, right? That it wasn't just these stories. Like, well, I just really wish it was different. I wish God would just come out and tell us what we need to know, right? I was really disappointed in them because they seemed to miss something, and that's this. They wrote that, and they were almost saying it this way. They were almost saying, "I wish the Bible was better. That it would be better if we had answers. Right? It'd be better if we had a system. It'd be better if God just come out and tell us. Right?" I was really disappointed because that's not true at all. Because God didn't give us the scriptures that we have to trip us up, right? Or to make us study extra hard and see if we're smart enough to learn. God gave us the scriptures that we have because that's the best possible way He could have revealed Himself. And why is that? Look this. Wouldn't it have been better if we had a chart instead of flannel graph stories? No. It wouldn't have been better. You know how I know that? Well, I mean, I don't want to say this is like this. I don't want to sound cocky, but because I know God. I know He's not in the habit of hiding anything from us or giving us anything second rate. Because this is literally a better way of getting to know Him than a chart. We're going to explain a little more what I'm talking about. Go to this next picture. Okay. Who's this lady? Anybody remember? Man, I can't believe Doc's here. This was my grandmother, Hilda Peake. Right? And Doc played the bagpipes at her funeral a few years ago. All right. She was 94, 95 when she passed. Now, some few of you probably met her. Do you know her? A lot of you haven't. Jovi knew her in those last years. And she was an incredible woman, an incredible character. She was a member of the greatest generation, which they call for that for a good reason, right? Now, for those of you who have never met her, if I wanted you to know her, what would I tell you? Would I tell you her birth, her date of birth, and her date of death? Would I tell you how tall she was? Would
I?
No, that was the other grandmother. Right. That was the other grandma. Yeah. But you're right. If I wanted you to know her, what would I tell you? I'll tell you stories. Right. I would tell you stories, wouldn't I? Like, I would tell you the stories. I mean, it just happened so many times when I was a kid. We'd be going to Ryan's or Bonanza or, you know, Aunt Sally's or a place like that. And her and some other adult, you know, I'd be little, and some other adult, whether it's one of her kids or one of her brothers, would be there. And then we'd have this great meal and everybody would be real happy. But at the end, somebody brings a check. Anybody guess what happens? Like a fist fight breaks out. Right. Between her and her brother especially, they would almost come to blows. They would just get so mad. No, I'm going to pay for that. No, don't you dare. And they would cut, you know, she didn't cuss, but she used the S word a lot, you know, just, you know. That was about the only one. That was the only one, but she used it liberally, and that was awesome as a kid. And they would just come, you know, almost come to blows fighting over who got to get the ticket and pay for it, you know, because she... her husband died. My mom's dad died when my mom was a little girl. And so that woman, if nothing else, worked. She worked until she was in her 80s, right? She worked at the state hospital, and then she sat with old people. You know, in her 70s, she would go sit and take care of old people. But, I don't know. She was an incredible person, a huge influence on me. But you get what I'm saying. If I wanted you to know her, I wouldn't give you data. I would tell you stories. Right? Yeah, something you can relate. Exactly. I think we have another blunt. What's after this? And so the point of this ultimately why God gave us this is not so that we would have data. Right? Even though data is important, and there's lots of it in here, right? I think God gave us this so that we could know Him. Because God's not just an idea. He's not just some nameless force. He's real. Like, actually, really real. Like, real. And it's kind of an intimidating idea if you think about what we're actually saying. Like, he's really exists. He's real. Like the chair you're sitting on. Like you. He's real. And not just some nameless force, but a person. Not a human being, not a Homo sapiens, but he has personality. Right. It's very, very real. God wants us to know Him. And the best way that he could possibly think of to make that happen. Her stories. And each story is not complete or all-encompassing or, you know, the be-all, end-all. Each story is just like the stories I would tell about my nanny. You know, each story, in itself, each story is kind of like a data point. Each story reveals something. Each story just gives you a little further glimpse. Each story gives you just a little bit more of a hint of their character, right? So each one of these stories we read, we think, so God's like that. He's also like this. He's also like this, even though this seems to contradict that. But he's also like that. Yeah. He's also like this, even though, you know, so that takes it up a notch. That clarifies things. But he's also like this in this other direction. He's not easy to define. It's like Hilda Peak. She was not easy to define. Right? Impossible. Yeah, impossible. Yeah. So I don't want you to be able to define God and to... You'll have a sword drill, right? We remember the sword drills? Yeah. Even though it's not much of a sword, make a pretty acceptable club to bludgeon somebody with. But yeah. Yeah, a sword drill, when we were... Yeah, you've never been through this. You would... How would you do it? What was the term? You remember what they said? They'd say something.
Different versions of it.
Oh, okay. There's something about... Yeah, you hold it up. So something about draw your swords. And then they would say... Turn 1 Corinthians 15:51, if that's even a real thing. And you go, and the first person to get it would pop up out of their seat and then read the verse, right? I don't know how I got on sword drills. But I really don't know. I lost my train of thought. Another trip down memory lane. But... So what stories, and you know a lot of these stories about God. What is your, what is one of your favorite stories? You know, from the Bible. That just has a little bit about, just gives you one more glimpse about what God's like. All right? You think, what's one of your favorite ones? I'll tell you one of my favorite ones. It's one of the most popular. It's not this, you know, you expect me to come up with the most obscure one, right? Huh? Jovi's favorite is the net with the fish. This is one of my favorite ones right here. Luke 15, and he said, there was once a man who had two sons. The younger said to his father, Father, I want right now what's coming to me. Yeah. What's this story? Prodigal son. You want to read? We don't really need to read through it, I don't guess. Y'all, let's, why not? So the father divided the property between them. Was it? No, well, we skipped it.
Sorry.
No, we didn't. So the father divided the property between them. It wasn't long before the younger son packed his bags and left for a distant country. There, undisciplined and dissipated, he wasted everything he had. After he had gone through all his money, there was a bad famine all through that country, and he began to feel it. He signed on with a citizen there who assigned him to his fields to slop the pigs. He was so hungry he would have eaten the corn cobs and the pig slop, but no one would give him any. That brought him to his senses. He said, all those farmhands working for my father sit down to 3 meals a day, and here I am starving to death. I'm going back to my father. I'll say to him, Father, I've sinned against God. I've sinned against you. I don't deserve to be called your son. Take me on as a hired hand. He got right up and went on to his father. While he was still a long way off, His father saw him. His heart pounding, he ran out, embraced him, and kissed him. The son started his speech. You know, I love that, and I like that this paraphrase here included that. The son started his speech. He had this speech prepared, right? You know, have you've been in a situation where you do that, where there's something you have to correct. There's, you know, when I meet this person, I'm going to say that I have my words ready. I'm going to say this. The son started his speech. Father, I've sinned against God. I've sinned before you, and I don't deserve to be called your son ever again. But the father wasn't listening. He cut him off. I mean, just picture that, right? I mean, this, you know, the son with his speech prepared, this big apology, he's going to, you know, just try to beg his dad to let him take him back as a hired hand. And his father ran up and grabbed him and kissed him and hugged him. And then he turned around while he was giving this prepared speech. His father turned around and was calling to the servants, "Quick, bring a clean set of clothes and dress him. Put the family ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And then get a prize-winning heifer and roast it. We're going to feast. We're going to have a wonderful time. My son is here, given up for dead and now alive, given up for lost and now found." And so the party began. And all this time, his older son was out in the field. When the day's work was done, he came in. As he approached the house, he heard the music and dancing. Calling over one of the house boys, he asked what was going on. He told him, "Your brother came here. Your father has ordered a feast, barbecued beef, because he has him home safe and sound." The older brother stopped off in an angry sulk and refused to join in. His father came out and tried to talk to him, but he wouldn't listen. Then suddenly said, "Look, how many years I've stayed here serving you, never giving you one moment of grief. But have you ever thrown a party for me and my friends? Then this son of yours who has thrown away your money on prostitutes shows up and you go all out with a feast." His father said, "Son, you don't understand. You're with me all the time, and everything that is mine is yours. But this is a wonderful time, and we had to celebrate. This brother of yours was dead, and he's alive. He was lost, and he's found." And that's the story. And that's the story Jesus told himself about God. Right? And I'm sure all of us, you know, identify and put ourselves in that story, right? And kind of the traditional way of thinking about it is putting yourself in the place of the son who ran off, right? I'm sure we all can, and that's valid.
I was thinking about how the dad must have felt when he just seen his son in the bar.
Right.
His heart just went
to us. Yeah, absolutely. Right. But the primary character, one of the primary characters in the story, that if you actually look at what prompted Jesus to tell this story, was actually to religious people who were saying, "Oh, I can't believe he's hanging out with all that trash," right? And so, according to what prompted Jesus to tell the story, the primary character is the older brother, right? Who thinks that they're here and that they've earn this spot, earn this father's love, earn this father's respect, and can't believe that he's just so, you know, head over heels about this kid who went and wasted everything, right? He's jealous, I guess. You know, and I could put myself in those shoes, thinking I'm better than the people out there, right? And what I love, we call this story by the wrong name. Everybody, we know it all is the prodigal son. The word prodigal is not in it. Here's what the word prodigal means, right? Wastefully or recklessly extravagant. Giving or yielding profusely, very generous or lavish. Lavishly abundant and profuse. You know, who's prodigal? The father. Out of all sense of propriety, out of anything that makes any sense whatsoever, he just gives and gives, just lavishes on those sons. You know, This is not the story of the prodigal son. This is the story of a prodigal God. God is prodigal. God is reckless. God is extravagant. God is profuse. So that's one thing I get from this story. I get to know God a little better. One thing I get from this story is if I put myself in the place of the older brother, you know, he says, look, I've worked for you all these years. You never once even gave me a goat to have a party with my friends. And the dad said, look, boy, what's wrong with you? Everything I've got is yours. I never told you you couldn't have a party with your friends. I never told you not to celebrate. I never told you not to enjoy your life. You know, so we shouldn't trick ourselves into thinking that we have to be so solemn and work so hard and earn so much from God. He wants us to enjoy our place as His children too. Emmanuel's singing that song, what about mercy needs a little mercy now? When this tells me about this God again who's real. Very real. That there is more mercy to go around than we could ever imagine. You know, these people in our families that we were praying about when we started, there's mercy to go around for them too. So what's y'all's favorite? What's a favorite story? Not the favorite, but what's a favorite story you have about God in the Bible?
I like that He leaves the 99.
Mm-hmm.
I always think of that,
yeah.
When I'm feeling bad or revenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, those are awesome stories. That tells you a lot about God, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Daniel, what do you got? What's one of your favorite ones? No. Mm-hmm. Paul?
That was one that came to mind.
Really?
One reason was the beginning was the father. Son's a long way off, father sees him.
Mm-hmm.
So I get the picture, the father's there, he's been looking, I don't know how much mm-hmm. day, time he's been scanning the horizon,
mm-hmm.
watching for him to come back. So, like, you know, our three kids, when they started driving, they'd go off in the car. I can relate to that. I could never peace, could never rest. I saw that car turn into the driveway, start down the driveway, and then.
Right.
I wasn't in peace.
Right.
I saw him turn and driveway and start back out. Yeah.
Huh. You know, when you're saying that, I thought back when I was younger, you know, I was dating Shelley, so I still live in Chihuahua, so I drive over the mountain to Troutdale. You know, and that's before I was first started dating her, it was before they improved the road over Iron Mountain over 600. And I always get so mad, you know, I would get back, and I've never been late, I've never been on time to anything in my life, but, so I would get home at like 15 minutes past when I was supposed to, and I would get so mad that my parents would get mad that I was 15. I was like, dude, what's the problem? It's 15 minutes, so what? You know, but then you're saying that, I'm thinking from their perspective,
yeah.
You know, cool. Yeah.
They might go to sleep on the couch, but they call you on the road.
Yeah. What else? What's another story from the Bible that you like? Sticks out.
The issue of blood.
The woman touching the garment. Won't you tell the story? You want to tell the story real quick?
When Jesus was surrounded by this, I believe it says a great throng of people. You just imagine, you know, people so thick that you can't walk through it. And this woman with an issue of blood was bleeding. And she was unclean. She had not even been out in public. But she made her way through and just touched the fringe of his garment because she had thought in herself, you know, that if she could just touch him, he didn't even have to know, and she would be healed. And when she touched the garment, she was healed. And Jesus turns around and says, "Who touched me?"
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot there.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Somebody else? Jeff, you got one? I see you flipping back there. What's your favorite story, Doc? Very favorite story.
Somebody already said.
Yeah.
90 and 9.
Yeah.
The
cool.
One lost sheep.
Mm-hmm.
Which always reminds me that if I were the only one that Jesus was going to save, he still would have done it
mm-hmm.
for me.
Yeah.
It's so incredible.
Mm-hmm. Dad, you got one?
I like when Jesus speaks back to you.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one. Tell that story.
This guy, Matthew, and he's a tax collector for the Roman Empire. He betrayed his people. And presumably, nobody really likes him. He's very wealthy. Wealthy like Zacchaeus, probably because he took money he shouldn't have taken from people, maybe. And there's a new rabbi in town. Everybody's talking about him. It's a big deal. People want to be a part of what he's doing. And he shows up at the tax collector booth, the last place you'd imagine that this rabbi would choose a disciple. And tells old Levi, "Come on, follow me. You want my disciples. You want part of what I'm doing." And he's so excited. Levi just can't believe it. Or Matthew. Levi or Matthew. He can't believe it. He goes home and he has a big celebration. Kind of like the story that Jonathan moved to. It's a big celebration. He brings in all his friends. Wants everybody to know. And Jesus. I know Jesus. Here he is. I want you to know him.
Mm-hmm.
And people got mad too. And they said, "What in the world is Jesus doing hanging out with that kind of folks?" And Jesus says, "I'm here to help people who are really in trouble. And if you think you're healthy, you don't need a doctor. But I'm here to help mm-hmm. people that know that they need God."
Mm-hmm.
I think about my kids' favorite stories too. They've become mine too. Asher Love, the story about Saul meeting Jesus on the road to Damascus.
Really?
Yeah, it's his favorite. Michael loves the story about the Roman centurion told Jesus, "Come and heal my servant, but you don't have to come to my house."
Yeah.
I don't want to trouble you with that. I'm not worthy to have you come to my house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the really cool thing is God's still telling stories.
Amen.
Right. And some of my favorite ones are, you know, people in this room. Manuel, that's a story about God, dude. Maddie, you're a story about God. Melinda was talking to me yesterday about you. Kind of the decisions you've made in your life and the stands you've made, man, that's a story about God. You think about where, you are a story about God, the real God who is. Right. All right. That's all I have to say, I think. Chad? Okay.